Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, it's coming up to the end of the year or start of the year, and I'm looking at all these topics and stuff. And plus, as you know, in the this podcast, the Speaking of Reliability podcast, we're coming up on our 500th episode in a month or so. So we're getting out to where we're going to have to really think through what we're going to do for that. And I got some ideas. But I'm also looking back at the analytics and topics and all this stuff we've done. At one point I thought, well, I'm going to figure out how many times we talked about design is key, design in the reliability or design for reliability or, you know, all those kind of things. You know, I don't think we actually talked about it.
No, really? That would be amazing.
Yeah.
500 podcasts.
Yeah. I think we've alluded to it. We've talked about its importance. We certainly have talked about a bunch of different tools and tasks and ways to go about doing it. We've talked about change management. We've talked about how do you work with engineers? How do you work with suppliers? We've talked about identifying risks and testing and all kinds of great topics, which reminds me, when we first started this, we thought we'd get 20 episodes and then run out of ideas what to talk about.
Yeah.
But with lots and lots of comments and questions from listeners, it's been great. We've gotten positive feedback, but we've also gotten great ideas for future topics. So I'll do an early plug, you know, so if you're listening to this and got an idea that we've not covered yet, or would you like us to cover in a different way or in a certain circumstance, let us know. And I'll give you the link at the end of the episode. But, you know, maybe we should dive into how do you design in designing for reliability kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. The design process is really important. In other words, how you create the design, or what's called the product development process, for every company, is an essential template or essential layout to achieving their goals, the requirements, not reliability requirements, the product requirements and process requirements. And somehow reliability's got to fit into that. And it does need to fit into the design at different points.
Well, you know that, you know, one of the barriers to that, I mean, I don't get invited to very low maturity companies that think reliability is the fault of the customer. Any failures that occur is their problem kind of thing. And there's companies like that out there, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But most that care about reliability tend to look at it as, oh yeah, we do reliability because we think about it and we spelled it correctly 3 times. And it's hard to do, so we don't give them lots of samples, or we don't let the reliability folks deal with anybody else. You know, they go do their predictions over there someplace, and they do reliability with air quotes on it because they hired somebody to do a prediction.
The reliability becomes an afterthought, or it becomes a virtue. Let's be virtuous and hire some reliability engineers, but don't get them too integrated with the design engineers, because design engineers are really busy.
That's right. They're really, really busy, and they're important people, and they got to get the functions right, and they have to hit the cost targets. And, oh, by the way, they got to get it out on time. And so if you add, you know, and it's a fair concern of a design team, is because there's a reliability team saying, oh, you got to make sure it lasts a long time. Then there's the sustainability team saying, well, it has to be ecologically friendly throughout its life cycle. And then you got the manufacturing team saying, you know, we got to be able to build it, and on and on and on. The design for X list has gone beyond the alphabet now, I think.
I think just about everybody that's been involved in reliability engineering or attended conferences like at RAMS, we hear over and over how reliability must be designed into products and processes. Yeah. It's a mantra. And then the question comes down, how do you do that? I know I've thought about this a lot, and I've participated in many of the exercises that have tried to integrate reliability into product development process. So it might be fun just to share some of our experiences. on that topic.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be the devil's advocate here because I've just there's so many barriers. But I agree. Yeah, let's go through how do you actually do it? And it, I mean, one of the barriers is that many of the requirements that's placed on the design team are immediately or quickly measured. So time to market, you just look at the calendar, right? Are we ready to launch or not? And are we going to be there in 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever the timeline is? And you have program project managers that lay out a calendar for all these tasks and milestones focused on that time to market launch.
Well, yeah, and you have cost that's easily measurable. You have packaging, weight, materials. There are different things that are you get a quick response. And as I can see, you're alluding to, reliability is not one of them.
That's right.
Reliability does not have a quick turnaround.
Well,
It
unless it fails really, really quick, right? We've seen that too. And then they get interested in
Yes,
it.
suddenly.
Yeah.
So it's more than a metric, and that's the key to this, or maybe it's getting to the right metrics, because if you use reliability as a metric, like the definition of, some percentage success for intended functions under conditions, et cetera, that metric is not quickly measured. However, if you can convert reliability into product characteristics, for example, dimensions or material, this type of thing, so that if you achieve certain characteristics, then you will achieve reliability, then that becomes measurable.
Well, I'm thinking of a concrete example in that, and I'm thinking of the sizing of a brake pad on a vehicle, on a passenger vehicle, for example, right? I know that it wears, right? But you don't want to create a nice thin light brake pad that will only last a week, that the customer would be replacing brake pads, every week or every month. And so it's got to last some, there's some requirement that it lasts some amount of time so that the wear, the rate of wear of that material is, it's not trivial to measure it, but it can be measured fairly quickly. And then once you know that rate as a function of its diameter and pressure and so on, you can engineer a thickness that will last the appropriate time. I think that's what you're alluding to is let's build it
That's
into things
exactly
that we can
right.
measure.
That's right. So if you can make that translation between the how long it lasts, which is a form of metric, if you can translate that to the cross-sectional area or the geometry and the material composition, certain hardness or whatever that you can measure from a design standpoint, if you can make that transition, then you can achieve reliability in design.
A lot of designers do that pretty inherently, right? Let's say they're designing a flange that's going to hold a particular weight. And they go, well, I know that the material's got variability in it, and I know that the weight will vary. And our estimates are the max load it's going to see is 1,000 pounds, and but I'm going to double that just to take care of the variability. Some of the calculations are not even done in the stress strength calculation. They're not done. They're just, I'm going to put some margin in it, right? And I think that is helps to a large degree, but that's what one of the things that engineers, designing engineers or product engineers tend to do, right? Within the all those other constraints, so space and weight and cost and everything else, as a way to make sure that their design works.
Right. So the wrong way to do integrate reliability into this product development process is just to hand out an allocated reliability number to a design engineer and then walk away.
Yeah,
I mean, that
sorry.
would be the extreme wrong way to do it.
Yeah, we at HV we used to do that. It was you get
Oh,
0.2 failures per year for your product. And he
we
looked at
did
it.
that at GM.
Yeah, what's
we
a
had
0.2?
yeah you're, the hinge designer gets 0.2 defects per 1,000 vehicles. Great.
That's right. So like, okay, what do I do with that?
Yeah,
How's that
so
work?
that's the wrong way, and then we can talk about the right way. There's different points like just going back to product development process, you have concept selection or feasibility, whatever you want to call the early stage before you get in, before you've identified the concept and agreed upon it. So you're developing a concept or your proof of concept, that type of thing. Now you can be working with design engineers to see if you have concept A, B, and C, which ones have certain risk related to reliability, one more than the other. So you can help doing some, you know, like a concept FMEA or a concept estimation, or basically which failure mechanisms would be most concerned about. So there's different things you can do as a reliability engineer in the concept stage. Then once you've got a concept, you go into design stage, and that's called different things in different companies, but often called design. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about, where we might translate the reliability requirements into certain product characteristics of the design, so that you, if you achieve those, then you'll achieve the reliability.
Well, Carl, that goes a long way if you know what those failure mechanisms are, right? If, like the brake pad example is, I know that it wears, and if I understand the wear rate, then I've got it nailed, right? I've got a viable model to do that translation. But some things, we just don't know how it's going to fail. So I'm thinking in the design stage, we don't even have prototypes yet. We might be able to do mock-ups of new technology or do other things to uncover failure mechanisms, right?
Right.
But it's also that risk assessment in more detail, as we say, oh, we're going to use titanium instead of steel. Well, all right, well, what's the change in risk there, right?
Yeah, what are we worried about titanium? You know, what could go wrong from a mechanism standpoint?
Right. And it's part of, I think, what we offer at that point, as much as anything, is we ask and prompt the questions that should be asked and decided on early, so that it can be designed into it. It's because the design engineers, some of them are focused strictly on performance, and others are on cost, and a few, you know, but they all have a threshold where reliability becomes, oh, we can't cross that line. We have to make it at least this good. So I think by focusing in on where the risks are and what the failure mechanisms are at that very early stage, it creates the right kind of discussions and trade-offs early on.
Yeah, it does. I recall working on design review integration, reliability integration into design reviews, and those can be, obviously, design reviews are very often at different stages of the product development process.
Right.
And the reliability representative in that design review can be asking those questions. What are the mechanisms that we anticipate? Or, you know, what about the length of life? What is the what are the goals on that? Or how you can develop questions that integrate with different stages of design review.
I usually ask, so what's going to fail, when, and how do you know? And how do you know? And early on, it's a lot of engineering estimates, guessing, I should say, just plain, well, this is where we think we are, which is a very important clue as to where we need to go focus some experimentation and more study and some testing, is to clean early on, is we're going to start, the design starts with a lot of assumptions. Well, some of those can be problematic if that assumption is not true. So let's sort those out as early as possible. I think asking those questions and focusing on what do we know and what do we don't know, and how's it going to last, and so on. Now, one of the barriers early on, even especially in the concept phase, is that just about every team I've dealt with, is the concept phase is done in the back room by three people, you know, the marketing manager, the sales manager, and the director level folks. And they come out and say, all right, we're going to make this. And nobody's seen it before, especially the quality and reliability team. How do you get, you know, upstream into those discussions, which seem to be so clouded so many places?
Yeah, that's a great question. How do you elbow your way into that conference room at the right times? When I was a GM, I learned that the concept development decisions were often made, this is years ago, decades ago, were often made based on cost, based on timing, based on some other feasibility requirements, but not based on reliability.
No.
And so I had a proactive director at the time, executive director, who got me into some of those meetings. So you have to have a connection to management in some way. You
Yeah.
have to sort of sell yourself to management that you need to be part of that discussion.
Yeah, and part of it is not to say I told you so. That doesn't go very far in
No,
many
that's not a good
organizations.
team member.
No, and it's also, you can use those examples to say, you know, on the next program, we need to avoid this. And one way to do that is identify it earlier. Let's get this part of the discussion and concept and then have a champion to help you get there. That all works, but it's the tough one, I think, to solve in the overall product.
One of the ways I got into that discussion is offering to do or help with Concept FMEA, which is a very shortened version. It's not the full FMEA with all the different columns. It's a shortened version that just says, what are the concerns that you have from a failure mode and mechanism basis of these different concepts? And then how, basically, what is the risk related to those concerns? And summarizing that in some way for concept A, B, and C. And by making that offer, I got a place at the table.
But it also becomes immediately valuable because just about everybody at that table is knows programs that got late in the development and then they found something that delayed it a year. Right?
Yeah.
And if they can find it in concept phase and know to look for it and to analyze it, to understand it, then they got time to do it. And they can expose those things sooner than later. And program teams start to appreciate that when you move that up front, it's much easier to deal with and it saves them time. That's where I find it the most valuable, is it saves them time in cost and other things too. But yeah, it's still a tough one in most organizations to get into that. You got to build the track record and trust and then get to concept phase and really add value.
Just talking about product development process for a minute, depending on where the company is on reliability and maturity, some companies get to the point where they're documenting their product development process quite well. And in that documentation, which follows, some type of paragraphing, and design stage number 1.2 or whatever, is going to be what people do, the roles and responsibilities. And if you can get the reliability integrated, in other words, the reliability tasks integrated at that level of detail, and I realize you have to be fairly mature as an organization to do that, but that can be a wonderful mechanism to create the pull signal as to bit just trying to wave your arms all the time and
Well, yeah,
to
I agree. And, many of the product lifecycle documents will include, at this stage, we're going to do designs and start lining up supply chain. And here we're going to do first prototypes and, and first product look like that's going to look like the final product at this stage. And there's a set of milestones, essentially, that
Yes.
here's accomplishments or tasks that we need to do to get to this stage. And
And if we can get reliability requirements definition in that document, if we can get initial FMEA, if it's appropriate or not, in other words, determine what FMEAs you are going to do or not, if we can get things like that language into those documents, it can be helpful.
now, I've run into two issues with this. One is that, and you and I have talked about it at length, is you don't want to create a list of tasks and just do that every program because you have to, and I think we're pretty adamant about, at least I am, is that what you do in each program has to be tailored to that program and that circumstance situation at the time. Now, there's some things like in the requirements of a document, it's well, how long is it supposed to last and how long is it supposed to work and what environments and so on. The reliability definition, I think that's should be and often is universal. And then the life cycle should be, well, how do we know where we're at in that realm? I think that can be a constant through the life cycle as you hit different stages is the ability to go from flat out assumptions and a concept FMEA type level understanding to more of a detailed. Here's the 8 mechanisms we expect to have, and here's why we know they're good enough. You know, and here's the evidence.
What if we simplified this? Because we have discussed this, and we have a book that that follows a 5-step process. If you take the 5 steps, you know, step 1 is, you know, your reliability vision, which includes the requirements, the capabilities, that type of thing, mm-hmm. or where you want to be. And step 2 is the gaps, and step 3 is the selecting the methods. Step 4 is the plan. If you can integrate those steps into the product development process so that people know when to develop the reliability plan, when do we need that reliability vision and requirements? Yep. If we could get that level of detail in, that would be a great, great progress.
Oh, you just summed it up in 30 seconds. We could have said that at the start.
Yes.
We would have been good.
That's just an interesting thought is take that 5-step process and get that integrated into the company's product development process milestones.
You know, it actually, I'm thinking through that, it probably fits very, very well. Because, I mean, in early concept phase, you really need to know where you're going with your vision of where does this fit into the portfolio of reliability aspects and things like that. I see it as fitting fairly well. But it avoids, though, it sets up the structure, the framework to create the appropriate tasks and the appropriate plan. It doesn't
that
say,
way we're not baking in which tasks.
That's
because
right.
Because you don't know that without doing the plan.
That's right. No, we'll have to look at that a little closer. That might be another chapter in that book.
I think.
Oh, heavens no.
Well, we're at a point where we can ask listeners if you have any experience in integrating reliability or successes into your product development plans, and if you have any things you can share with us on how that works.
Yep, and head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a forum you can get in touch with us with. Also on the site under our About pages, you can find our email or contact forms there. And we're also pretty prevalent or visible on LinkedIn. So you can certainly find us there. But the bottom line is we really do love hearing from you. It's become groundswell is probably not the right word, but the motivation for us to continue to hit record and answering questions and bringing up topics for you to think about. So please let us know how it goes and join the conversation. So with that, Carl, I think we'll wrap this one up.
Sounds good, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.